This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in. It is Sharp Money. Here's my right hand if you're watching us at home. I'm Jeff Parles. Amal Shaw's alongside Dustin Swadelson's here. Dustin, am I reading the calendar right? July 31st?
I actually thought there weren't 31 days in July. I don't know why I thought that.
Well, the trade deadline was always the 31st, and then they decided to just move it to the 1st because baseball does baseball things.
No, but I did wake up today thinking it was August 1st, and then I went to put the rundown together, and I saw it was July 31st, and I was really thrown for a loop, and then I had to sing the song in my head. 30 days has September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31. And I realized I never said July in there.
You just can't remember them?
No, you have to sing the song.
I don't know the song, but it's pretty simple. You say, okay, November, 30 days, December, 31. I mean, April, 30.
Not everyone's brain is as big as yours, Amal.
February, guys.
28, February. Depending on the year, 29.
Well, there'd be 29 next year.
That's correct, the second verse of the song about February.
Yeah. No, hey, look, I know the song. It was great when we were, that was probably kindergarten, right?
I don't know. I'm 38. I still sing it. What are you talking about? Kindergarten?
No, I mean, when we first learned it. Not now. I know you're.
I didn't learn it my first time in kindergarten, but the second time it stuck.
Okay, fair enough. See, the whole point of that is Patrick's back tomorrow, which is going to be a lot of fun to see Patrick back.
If you think so,
well, maybe, who knows? I don't know. Patrick will be back tomorrow, so you got me for one more day. So we're gonna have a lot of fun here today. Matt Humans. I think you've heard of him. Mm-hmm. I think you've heard him a few times. Joins us at the top of the next hour. George Bremer covers the Colts for the Herald Bulletin. That's 4:30 Eastern time. And then former major league pitcher now works for SiriusXM MLB Network Radio. Jensen Lewis at the top of our final hour, 5:00 Eastern time today. Amal, this has been a very weird NFL quote weekend.
Yeah.
Tweet weekend, X weekend, whatever it's called now, whatever Elon's decided to do with that. But let's start in New York. So, of course, at the end of last week, the USA Today article where Sean Payton just took a complete hatchet to Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
Not saying he was wrong, but you never see that type of thing from a head coach going after another coach or coaching staff within the profession. Usually you see niceties. You don't see, hey, this is one of the worst coaching jobs of all time. There's blood on 10 people, on 10 hands, all that fun stuff. So Aaron Rodgers, who has had a lot of success, two MVP years, with Nathaniel Hackett as his offensive coordinator. Now, of course, Hack is now the OC with the Jets. Aaron Rodgers went to bat for his guy. This is from NFL Network. Peter Schrager interviewing Rodgers over the weekend at Jets camp.
Those comments were very surprising. For a coach to do that to another coach. My love for Hack goes deep. You know, we had some great years together in Green Bay. Kept in touch. Love him and his family. He's an incredible family man, incredible dad. And on the field, you know, he's arguably my favorite coach I've ever had in the NFL. Just his approach to it, how he makes it fun, how he cares about the guys, just how he goes about his business with respect, with leadership, with honesty, with integrity. And it made me feel bad that someone who's accomplished a lot in the league is that insecure that they have to take another man down to set themselves up for some sort of easy fall if it doesn't go well for that team this year. Thought it was way out of line and inappropriate, and I think he needs to keep my coach's names out of his mouth.
Well, we appreciate the comments by Serena Williams. I'll tell you another thing that drives me nuts. Everybody who criticizes somebody is not insecure, okay, Aaron? Captain Insecurity over here leading the charge. Nathaniel Hackett was terrible. There's just no other way around it. So he got called out by Sean Payton. Why are you so worried about what other people think of you? Who cares? Don't worry about it. Just move on. You've got an opportunity with the team. Your guy got hired here. Just sit there and say, hey, listen, we don't agree with the comments. We're not worried about what's going on in Denver. We're going to concentrate on what's going on here with the Jets. That's it. Call it a day.
Yeah, but that's no fun. Come on, that's no fun. I mean, you're at a point now where, first off, the Sean Payton quotes are as good of quotes as you're ever going to get from any professional coach. It's none of the cliched garbage that we hear all the time.
Right.
That's why I loved what I read in that article. It was someone that was unfiltered, gave an honest opinion for once. And look, we all agree, Hackett didn't even know the play clock existed last year as a head coach. He was dreadful. And Amal, you know this as well as anyone. There are some guys that are just made to be coordinators. There are guys who, when you give them head coaching jobs, their brain melts. And that's exactly what happened to Hackett. Now, for Rodgers and other guys at a Jets camp, Sala didn't shut it down as much as I would have liked in the initial quote right after it came out as well. But look, anything that motivates your guys, Jets play at Denver later this year. Why not use it as an extra motivational stick? It doesn't matter. I'm okay. Look, I don't love it. The over-the-top protection of your guy, but I don't mind it either. Just use it as motivation when you go to Mile High in week five.
I first of all, if I were Rodgers, I would have come back with that. Isn't this the head coach whose defensive coordinator had bounties on people? I mean, we're really paying attention to a guy who was suspended because of his lack of character. I would have gone straight at him. I mean, I don't understand why you got to sit there. Listen, it's hard to defend Nathaniel Hackett. He was a terrible coach. There's no way around it. But look, the ineptitude of coaching is so prevalent in the NFL. It just is mind boggling anyway.
Well, that's again, I'm happy you brought that up. Not that it does have to do with this a little bit, but it's a little different, though. I'm all aware. There's supposed to be the 32 best head coaches in the world. The 32 best coordinators, the 32 best everything in coaching staffs. And we don't have the 32 best possible head coaches, coaching teams at any point. We're lucky if we have half the guys knowing what the heck they're doing.
I would agree with you there. I mean, you see it with clock management all the time. You know, I was on with Patrick and Michael Lombardi one time, and he said to me, he goes, well, Amal, if you're so smart, why don't you do this? I said, because the people hiring are not smart enough to hire people like me that actually understand the math on clock management. It's actually idiotic the way you see some of these teams and how they manage the clock. Hackett, you go back to the game against Seattle in the first week of the season. By the way, you're at sea level, and as Dustin so aptly pointed out, Seattle's at 174 feet on sea level. And instead of 175 when I said it, my point is McManus isn't the same kicker as he is at altitude at over 5,280 feet. It's just these types of things that frustrate people. Look, I don't understand why Rodgers even felt the need to come out and defend him.
Well, he's this guy. Listen, he's going to have his guys back. Come on.
No, I understand that. But let me ask you a question. Every time somebody criticizes you somewhere, let's say on social media, somebody says you're this or that, you sit there and you respond to everybody. Don't worry about it. Here's my philosophy. The fact that you're worried about me tells me I've already won. The fact that I'm not responding to you tells you it's like the old line everyone uses, rent free, right? It's like that.
I agree with you. I really don't like when adults care what other people think about them and then have to speak about it. But in this case, I do respect someone defending someone else. Like if it was Nathaniel Hackett coming out and being like, you don't understand what went wrong. It wasn't my fault. It was Russ.
Yeah, that would have been bad. Yeah.
But the fact that it's Rodgers defending Hackett, I think it's a little bit different.
That's again, I think it was a little over the top. Well, obviously everything was over the top here. Peyton's comments.
This is WWE.
Stuff we don't see in the NFL. We just don't see it.
It's entertaining, but I think Sean Payton also knows that he's like behind the pearly gates, right? Like there's a certain amount of like cachet and protection he gets afforded.
Here's the one other thing though. Like what happens? Like this is just cover for Payton too. What happens if Denver underachieves again? He's just going to, you can fling this back and say, hey, that coaching staff screwed up my team so badly.
I think it's the opposite.
You think if they're good that he's going to get all, you
know? No, I think if they're bad, Sean Payton's going to look even worse because he's
right.
He said the team stunk only because of Nathaniel.
That's also a fair way to look at it as well.
That's why I don't understand the comments. There's no need for them. And second, why add fuel to the fire for the matchup? I think week five. Yeah.
And it's a game the Jets are probably going to need with that difficult first 4 weeks.
This reading between the lines, I don't know. My vibe is that Russell Wilson doesn't look as good as Sean Payton thought.
I agree with that.
And he was doing this to fire him up to see what else is left in the tank.
Yeah, you're probably right there. You're probably right on that, oh boy, I might be looking at Jared Stidham if I have to on the back end of the schedule.
Jared Stidham. You just sit there and say, we're going to run the ball. We're going to go with an extra blocker. Yeah. Jared Stidham. Tim Patrick's out?
Tim Patrick this morning, had an ACL tear a year ago, missed most of the season. Now ruptures the Achilles in the opposite leg of where he tore the ACL last year this morning. So that hurts their depth. Really nice number three wide receiver. His season's done before it even starts. Of course, still Jerry Jeudy there, Courtland Sutton, a very nice 1-2 punch, but the depth takes a little bit of a hit, especially with Hamler as well, dealing with pectoral injury as well.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm not a believer in Russell Wilson. I think I'm a huge Russell Wilson fan. He's a Hall of Famer, but the drop-off has been precipitous in Denver, and I don't think, even though Sean Payton will be able to make some improvements, I don't think it's going to be enough to get this team to where people think they are. To me, I don't get this belief in Denver. Yes, their defense is very good, but overall, I just don't think Russell Wilson's the same guy he once was. And the fact that the Broncos gave him this long-term contract, let me ask you this question. What happens if a player under contract perishes? Is the contract off the books then? I'm just asking a question.
I'm sure there's something in the PA that the family gets some percentage of.
Yeah, but it doesn't hurt your salary cap is more what I'm concerned about.
Jeez, oh, God, I can't believe we're going here.
Oh. You guys obviously don't live in the real world anywhere in Central or South America and how things happen at times.
Oh, my God. Are you saying they should put out a hit on Russell Wilson?
Is that what you're suggesting? I'm just asking if something happened.
That's what it sounded like.
I'm smart enough to know how to phrase it. I did well on my LSATs. I actually should have gone to law school. I'm just asking, Dustin, what's your take on that?
All right, to your other point about Russell Wilson being cooked, here's the thing about Russell Wilson.
What is this, Narcos now?
The guy he thinks he is not who he is. That's his biggest problem on the field. The whole letting Russ cook has never worked once. And then the comments we've heard from his past Seahawks teammates making fun of him after his life leaving the team leads me to believe the personality is as weird as it looks from the outside. I'm just not buying Russell Wilson, similar to Amal, and I believe he should live a long, prosperous life for as long as God willing allows him to.
I don't know.
That you had to put the disclosure in on that, too.
I don't even know what he's...
You don't know what he's talking about? It's okay, regardless. I will say this, though. Dustin, you brought it up real quick there. The fact that all the Seattle teammates seemingly were thrilled with him not playing well in Denver, I think tells you all you need to know about what happened in the Pacific Northwest. Hey, Jonathan Taylor, Jim Irsay, weird things going on in Indy and the baseball trade deadline next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Want to get in on the fantasy action, but sick of managing your roster, sick of player injuries ending your season? With Best Ball and DK, you get the best of your team all year long. And this year, Best Ball and DraftKings is bigger than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes. For a limited time, you can join Best Ball on DraftKings and get your first entry back in DK dollars as soon as the draft is over. Sign up today on the DraftKings app. Sharp is the code you want to use to take advantage of this great offer before it expires. Teams with the most points by the end of the year will have a shot at taking home a $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? DraftKings app, code SHARP. Start playing best ball today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required. $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is $10 in DK dollars. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. It's Sharp Money here on VSiN live at the South Point. I'm Jeff Parles, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson alongside. We're all thrilled to be with you here on the final day of July. By the way, Amal, I was out of town this weekend. Mm-hmm. I was in Southern California. 80 degrees when you've been in 110 plus for a month. It's the greatest thing of all time.
But, I hear people complaining about the weather all the time when they visit here. I mean, unless you're working outside doing construction or doing landscaping, when do you actually notice it?
And this city has the best air conditioning units in all of the country.
There's no question about it.
Hold on. Here's what I'll say. Public places have the best air conditioning. That's what it comes down to more than anything. If you get my drift there.
Are you taking out? He's talking about killing people. Now you're
never said anything about killing
your apartment complex.
I will not say anything else. That's all I'll say.
First of all
I'll say.
It's like about Fight Club. Never talk about Fight Club.
I guess I'm a narc.
Man.
Dustin, I got to tell you right now, if we all three got picked up, there's no question my money would make you a $5,000 favorite to turn state's evidence.
Oh, to save myself?
Yes, there's no question.
My life is more important.
Oh, if it was the three of us,
100%. He would be the first one.
In all honesty, I think the two of us would be in a war for who would turn first.
What do you need on them? I got all the dirt. I got stuff that doesn't even apply to what we're in jail for right now.
That never happened. That'd be a fun way to explain things here at the network. But regardless. All right. So I want to go to the whole Indianapolis situation here real quick. Because this just doesn't make any sense. All of this. Jonathan Taylor... And there were the rumors of the back pain that went out that clearly got fed to reporters by the team to help him find ways not to have to pay him. Taylor tweeting out over the weekend, never had back pain, never reported back pain. Not sure where the sources are, but need to find new ones. Jim Irsay with this is the weirdest quote I think I've ever seen out of Irsay, which is saying something, because the man has had a lot of weird stuff over the years. If I die tonight and Jonathan Taylor is out of the league, no one's going to miss us. The league goes on. We know that. The National Football League rolls on. It doesn't matter who comes and who goes. It's a privilege to be a part of it. See, this Irsay's just taking a page out of your book here.
No, Paul. I took the page out of his book. Oh, okay. In theory, you know, there was a quote from an NFL owner. I thought it was a great runway lead-in to this question. That's why I just asked. In terms of salary cap, I wasn't sure how it affects Denver or potentially the Colts.
Fair. It's fair.
And then this morning, to make matters even more complicated in Indy, Zach Moss broke his arm during practice. So he's out 6 weeks. So that knocks him out at least the first week of the regular season, probably two. So things are going very well in Indianapolis right now for the Colts.
Look, this team's got a long way to go. Anthony Richardson's going to be running the ball quite a bit. I like Jonathan Taylor a lot more than apparently Jim Irsay does. But I understand the argument against not paying running backs. We've talked about this. It's what the market is, and you're just not going to get paid. My biggest thing is if you're a running back, you better learn to catch the football and start playing on the perimeter growing up in high school and college. You're going to have to shift positions. But here's the other thing I don't understand. These guys are still making $10 million a year. Unless you're an elite wide receiver at 20 or defensive end or DB, it's not like linebackers are making $20 million a year.
All sorts of industries have evolved over the last 20, 30 years.
That's a great point.
And They're not worth, and the people who work for them don't make as much as they made 20, 30 years ago comparatively.
Yeah.
This is just the evolution of society.
Right.
Like, this is just a part of the world. And as long as there's a salary cap and quarterbacks are making $45 to $50 million a year, and you need a good offensive line, and you still need a defense to stop other teams that have quarterbacks making $45 to $50 million a year, someone's going to take a hit here. And based on the past, I don't know, 10 to 12 Super Bowl winners where LeGarrette Blount was the leading rusher on three of them, the position does not matter like it used to.
Well, it's just the evolution of more passing in the game. It's as simple as that. And, you know, it's been an offseason where we saw Saquon Barkley not get a long-term deal. He ends up coming the term on a shorter-term deal. Jonathan Jacobs is still not in training camp for the Raiders, even though I'm stunned he didn't take the money, because that's pretty fair for what he is. And now Taylor, who, let's face it, as great as he is, Indianapolis hasn't been in the playoffs the last few years.
Go ahead.
Well, let's hear from Andy Reid,
yes,
who has won multiple Super Bowls with Darrell Williams, Isaiah Pacheco, guys of that nature as his running back. Here's what he had to say about this drama about the position wanting to get paid.
I think it's secular. I just think it goes. Running backs, when I got in the league, were making good money, and all of a sudden the pass game came up and it's working through the colleges and high schools, and so everybody wants to play wide receiver now that teams are throwing the ball. So devalues that position just a bit, but it'll come around. I mean, it'll work its way back around.
You know, I understand his comment, but I'll be honest. If I'm the head coach and they ask me that question, I would just say no comment and move on to the next question. There's nothing good kind of come of it. You can sit there and say, well, the running back should be paid. Then all of a sudden, Pacheco's going to go to management a year later and say, hey, I should be paid. Just sometimes no comment is the best comment.
And also, I don't know about you guys, I don't want one running back. If I'm investing all of that money in a salary cap league to one guy, if that guy gets hurt, that screws up my depth where I could win with two, three guys that are a little bit worse than an elite running back, but pay them all a little bit less across the board. I can rely on each one week to week as they're healthy.
Look at Philadelphia this coming into this year. Okay. Miles Sanders makes more money in Carolina now than all the Eagles running backs put together. Would you rather have just Miles Sanders, or would you rather have DeAndre Swift, Kenneth Gainwell, Rashad Penny, Boston Scott, and Trey Sermon? Yeah. It's not even a debate.
I'd rather lease my running backs than buy them.
That's a great analogy. And, you know, to me, when you look at these running backs right now, even you go to the collegiate level, Alabama's used multiple backs. Georgia's done the same thing. Michigan's got Corum and Edwards. You really do need two running backs. The game is very physical. It still has an impact in terms of over the course of the season. So I can appreciate where these teams have decided to go with a two-headed monster. It just makes more sense. Outside of Derrick Henry, who's, I mean, built like a defensive end.
Once in a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly.
Who, by the way, if he was coming out now, would and was up for a contract, he'd probably still get treated similarly.
I mean, he would have to because he's just the battering ram. How much longer can you do it, even if you're a physical specimen like him?
Well, and also, and tell me what they've won since paying.
And they made an AFC title game. That's the most they've done.
But it's not his fault. The quarterback play has been terrible.
But no, that's the point. The money is tied up in the running back. So then if you don't have an elite quarterback, let's say in their instance, they don't, they have a pretty solid game manager. You then can't pay for the other pieces around him to make him better.
And arguably, even though they made the AFC title game in the 2019 season as a six, they were a one seed just 2 years ago. And they lost that game because Ryan Tannehill turned the ball over multiple times and made the horrible throw that set up the winner at the end for McPherson.
Well, first of all, you don't want your quarterbacks to become wide receivers, Matt Jones, and you don't want your wide receivers to be quarterbacks. Tannehill is a perfect example of that. I think Vrabel's a tremendous coach. I love Derrick Henry. I mean, this guy's the all-time leading rusher in high school football, Heisman Trophy winner at Alabama, a premier running back in the National Football League for the last half a dozen years or so. He has been outstanding throughout his entire career. But again, like you guys talked about, the running back position has been devalued, and it's because it's a passing lead. I thought Dustin brought up a great point last week, Jeff. I don't know if you were here or not, but he talked about the fact that teams don't have great running backs over the last decade. You need quarterbacks. That's where it's at.
I also just made it about 5 minutes ago, too.
I just think that also on the scrap heap, remember CJ Anderson a few years ago
with the bowling ball. Yes.
There are dudes out there on the scrap heap that in the right offensive sit, the fact that Kyle Shanahan has Christian McCaffrey at running back is wild because I believe him, similar to his father, who had guys like Tatum Bell and Trunk Candidate run for a ton of yards in the league. I believe that there are decent guys not even on rosters right now at that position, where at the quarterback position, a receiver position, it's much harder to find.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. By the way, I would disagree with you on Trunk Candidate having a pretty good. Trunk Candidate was with the Rams and was.
Who was the other guy with Denver? Tatum Bell.
Yeah, Tatum, but that was a little bit after.
Mike Ed Bell?
McCaffrey. No, there was someone
Mike
else.
Anderson.
Mike Anderson. Yeah, Mike Anderson.
No, there was one more. I'll come up with it.
Trunk Candidate ran like a 4.3 at his Arizona Pro Day, and that's why he got drafted high by Mike Martz, and he wasn't playing Arizona State every week.
All I will say is, if you had a Trunk Candidate mentioned more than once on the show today, go cash your ticket at the window for a big price. We're going to college football next. Our college football betting guide out Thursday. Look at some Heisman numbers.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Sharp Money here on VSIN, live at the South Point, as we always are. I'm Jeff Barles. Dustin Sweetelson's here. Amal Shaw's here. And now with us, he hosts VSIN Tonight. He's a key cog to all of our written content as well. One of the originals here at VSIN. Our guy, Matt Eumanns, with us right now. Matt, I hear it's a big week for you as well. There may or may not be rankings coming this week as well from you.
What's that, college football rankings? I've got those in the VSIN college football guy. My top 25 teams. By the way, is this the only show on VSIN where the producer gets top billing? What did you say, Dustin Sweetelson is here? Is that the first thing you said?
No, that wasn't the first thing I said.
Probably was. Oh, okay. You're probably right, Matt.
I mean, yes, you are. You are probably right. Hey, look, you got to give the big guy credit, Matt. That's for sure. But, of course, our college football betting guide coming out later this week, Matt. Let's just dive right in. Let's go to some of your favorites before we go through some conferences here. Let's start in the Big Ten. It is a new era in Madison, Wisconsin. Of course, it is not going to be the ground and pound anymore. Luke Fickell, in what was a surprise to some, went over from Cincinnati to Wisconsin here. They have a win total of 8.5. Phil Longo comes in to be the new OC. They still have great running back in Braylon Allen, but Matt, this looks to be a whole new world for Wisconsin's offense in 2023.
Well, it could be, but a new world should be an improved world too, because I think even if you weren't a Wisconsin fan, you get tired of watching this offense the last couple of years with Graham Mertz, the quarterback, and Paul Chris calling the shots. It was an effective offense to an extent, but it was kind of boring. I think the Badgers are going to open things up a little bit to the point where the pass is actually going to be a threat. Now, with Tanner Mordecai and the field spread a little bit with some playmakers and wide receiver. But you got Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi, two of the best running backs in the Big Ten, and one of the best offensive lines, as usual. So I don't think the Badgers are going to change dramatically. I just think the pass is going to be more of a threat in this offense. And it should be a much improved offense with Mordecai at quarterback and a little bit of more imagination, let's put it that way. So I'm counting on Luke Fickell to build one of the Big Ten's better defenses here. And he's essentially got 18 starters back from last season. He's got a pretty good schedule with Iowa and Ohio State at home. A couple of road spots could be a little tricky. But I like Wisconsin a lot here. I think the Badgers should win the Big Ten West, and I like them over 8.5 wins. In that division of the Big Ten, there's really no standout teams this year. I think Wisconsin should be the best of them all. Iowa's going to be tough, as usual. But I like Whiskey over 8.5, and I also think they should win the West.
Matt, I love your call on Wisconsin over 8.5. And just to stay on this for a second, tell me where there's four potential losses on this schedule. You mentioned with Luke Fickell on this defense. I think Braylon Allen, look, I think Blake Corman Edwards have the best running back room in college football, but I think Braylon Allen's the best running back in the Big Ten, in my opinion. This team's going to be really dangerous. I don't think the Hawkeyes at home, they could beat Ohio State at home, potentially. Indiana's down. Northwestern's going to be bad. I mean, we know the game against Minnesota is always competitive, but I just don't see this team getting tripped up four times this year. I think this is one of the best over bets of the season.
Yeah, it was actually the first over bet I made them all was over 8.5 on Whiskey because I looked at the road schedule. First of all, you've also got Washington State and Purdue on there. But even if the Badgers get tripped up once, I still don't see how this team's going to go 8-4 with this schedule and counting on Fickell and what he brings as a coach because things did get a little stale, stagnant with Wisconsin's program in the last couple of years, and Fickell's going to change that. And like you said, Tanner Mordecai coming over at quarterback can only help the situation. Graham Mertz was an underachiever, a former five-star quarterback, and Braylon Allen's a stud. So I do. This is one of my, if not my favorite win totals, was Whiskey over 8.5.
Yeah, Jeff, Matt knows that Wisconsin's had a quarterback for 1 year with Russell Wilson, and that's it. Otherwise, last 30 years, they've just done it with running backs.
That's right.
So how it's been up in Madison. Matt, let's go to another one of your overs, another team that wears red. That's the Louisville Cardinals. Matt, it is very rare that you get an absurd improvement at head coach like Louisville has. They bring Brohm in, and after Satterfield shockingly got the Cincinnati job, boy, what a disaster for the Bearcats going to end up being. Very manageable schedule, too, with an improvement at head coach and a win total of 8.
You said it. I don't like the Satterfield hire at Cincinnati. I actually like the Bearcats under, but I'm going to go Louisville over here because if you look at the schedule, I would not be surprised if Jeff Brohm gets Louisville into the ACC championship game. You don't have Clemson. You don't have North Carolina. You don't have Miami. I think those are three. Clemson, Miami, and there's one other big boy from the ACC missing from that schedule. It's Florida State. Is that it? I think so.
Yeah.
So very manageable schedule for Jeff Brohm. I don't want to say it's a similar situation to what he took over at Purdue because that Purdue program was bottom of the barrel, rock bottom when Jeff Brohm came in and boom, right away he wins 7 games, wins a bowl game. That was one of the best coaching jobs in the country I've seen in the last 10 years, how quickly he turned that around. Jeff Brohm is a very innovative offensive coach. And he's got Jack Plummer, a former Purdue quarterback who spent last year at Cal as his QB. And he's got plenty of skill position talent. He sits transfer portal like a lot of these coaches do when they come in and try to turn things around right away. 7 starters back on defense. But the schedule is the key when I look at it in terms of Louisville's win total. It's not, you know, it's never easy to bet over a win total of 8. But again, it's very similar to Wisconsin. You're looking at road games, NC State, Pittsburgh, Miami, a neutral site game against Indiana. This one, Jeff Brohm looks like he tailor-made the schedule for the Cardinals in his first year. And again, he's not taking over a destitute program like he was when he went to West Lafayette 7 years ago. Brohm's taking over a team that won, you know, went 8-5, including that bowl game last year. And he's got a pretty good coaching staff he hired, too. He's going back home. You know, he's going to be – you're going to get the best of Jeff Brohm this year because there's a lot of hype in Louisville about his return. He's going to be fully focused to get this thing turned around quickly. I like Louisville a lot. I think it's a sleeper team to be in the ACC championship game. I'm not saying they're going to win the ACC, but just get the championship game like you did with Purdue last year. It's a Big Ten title game. So watch out for the Louisville Cardinals. Jeff DeBrum's going to engineer a quick turnaround.
Yeah, you talk about winning the coaching transition between Scott Satterfield leaving and Jeff Brohm coming in. I agree with you completely on that one, Matt. Matt, let's go to the Pac-12. I think this is a very intriguing league. I think probably when you look at the Power Five, in my opinion, most leagues probably have two or three teams. I think the Pac-12, you can make a case for potentially four to five teams that could win this league.
Oh, you're right about that, because I was talking about this with Michael Lombardi on his show, too, and if you look at the top four in the Pac-12, elite quarterbacks and high-level teams, USC, Caleb Williams, pretty obvious, Michael Penix in Washington, Bo Nix in Oregon, and Cameron Rising at Utah. You have four of the nation's top quarterbacks right there. Bo Nix realized last year what a drop-off it was from facing SEC defenses to facing Pac-12 defenses. You saw how much his numbers improved with the Ducks. But those four teams, I would say, you know, three of them are legit contenders for a college playoff spot. I think the concern here is Pac-12 teams at the top are going to cannibalize each other, and I'm not sure if one's going to emerge and make the playoffs. But I like USC a lot. I mean, if Lincoln Riley can't get to the playoff this year with Caleb Williams and all the talent he's brought in from the portal, when's he going to make it? Michael Penix was number two in the nation in passing yards at Washington last year, and Kalen DeBoer took over an offense that averaged 21.5 points a game and jacked it up to 39 points a game. And Penix has got its top two receivers back. Oregon's legit. Utah's made back-to-back Rose Bowls. And even when you get to teams like Oregon State and Washington State, those are pretty damn good teams. The top half of the Pac-12 is really, really good. Unfortunately, the conference in the big picture is falling apart, but I think this conference is going to go out with a bang. And even at the bottom, and near the bottom, you've got teams like Arizona State with Kenny Dillingham, the 33-year-old coach, who's got good quarterbacks to work with. He's going to prove to be a really good coach at Arizona State. Jed Fish doing a nice job at Arizona. I don't think there's any terrible teams aside from Stanford rebuilding at the bottom. I don't think there's any really, really bad teams this year in the Pac-12.
Let's go to the Big 12 real quick, because one of your favorite win totals is an under in the Big 12, and that's the Pokes of Oklahoma State. I mean, look, they had all sorts of quarterback issues last year because of injuries, but why do you like the Pokes under 6.5?
Yeah, like you said, I don't really like the Pokes at all. I think this is going to be one of Mike Gundy's worst teams, and he's got a track record. I think he's been to 17 straight bowl games. Well, he could get to a bowl this year, but he would be 6-6 if he gets there. One of the biggest losers in the country in the transfer portal was Mike Gundy. He lost a ton of talent. He's counting on Alan Bowman, a former Texas Tech and Michigan quarterback. He couldn't find the field in Ann Arbor. That's going to be his quarterback, but just a ton of talent lost and some star players that hit the portal after last season. The schedule's not easy. I think Oklahoma State's going to be a big disappointment. 6-6, I think, would be a good finish for Gundy this year, so under 6.5. is a really good bet for a team that, when I break it down, I don't see how the Cowboys get to 7 wins.
Tend to agree with you. I think they take a big step back. Spencer Sanders could be the starter in Oxford ahead of Jackson Dart. Yeah. So something to pay attention to. You know, I was talking about Gundy, but Mike Gundy has done a tremendous job, Matt, in terms of at Oklahoma State. You're right. I mean, people don't realize outside of his first year there, he has made a bowl game every year. It's going to be tough to duplicate that.
It's going to be tough for him to keep that streak going this year. It's going to be the most challenging year. Like, he's done a great job holding it together and stringing together a bunch of winning seasons and bowl appearances. But, man, I break down this team on paper, and I just don't see the talent there. So Gundy's going to be a magician. If he can win 7 games, I'm going to bet against him this time.
He's Matt Eumanns, of course. You see him on VSiN tonight with Wes Reynolds. You can find a lot of Matt's write-ups in the College Football Betting Guide coming up later this week. Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks for hanging out with us today.
All right, you bet, Jeff. Thanks.
We come back, a little bit of NFL, a little bit of baseball as we keep it rolling on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
final hour for us here on Sharp Money today. I'm Jeff Parles, Mal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, alongside here at the South Point Hotel and Casino, tip of the strip here in Vegas. Now joining us, pitched in the majors for 4 years for Cleveland. Also, you can hear him now on SiriusXM MLB Network Radio. Also, pre- and post-game on Bally Sports for the Cleveland Guardians. Jensen Lewis with us right now. Jensen, thanks for being with us today.
You bet, Jeff. Great to be with you and all yet again. What a busy day it's already been on the trade front, for sure.
So let's start with the guards. Aaron Civale traded to the Tampa Bay Rays, a good first base hitting prospect coming back to Cleveland. And Jensen, again, this is kind of the thing that the guards are in because of what the AL Central is. You look at a team that's at 500, normal circumstance would be, you know what, probably is the right move to sell, no doubt. But when you're a half game out of the division like Cleveland is, it's kind of weird to seeing them ship off a guy who is having a tremendous season.
Yeah, Jeff, the early returns, if you're a Guardians fan base here, as I've just literally come in from being outside, is they're not happy, at least on the surface. But I think if you look at this objectively, in the Cleveland front office, it feels like for at least the last 7 to 8 years, probably dating all the way back to Corey Kluber, they have had such a knack for knowing the time to trade these starting pitchers and pitching overall that they've had at the major league level. You can look at Corey Kluber, Mike Clevenger, Trevor Bauer, Carlos Carrasco, now Aaron Civale, heck, even Andrew Miller and Cody Allen. They have such a unique sense of when these starters and these pitchers overall have hit their apex. And I think for Aaron Civale, there's no doubt that his value couldn't have been higher after six starts here in July and what he's put together for the body of the season. So now you go get a potential middle of the order bat in Kyle Manzardo, age 23, controllable for six plus seasons. Civale will have, what, about two seasons and change left for control there in Tampa, who desperately needed some reinforcements in their rotation, considering the injuries to McClanahan. They got good news on Zach Eflin. Looks like he escaped an IL stint. And knowing Tyler Glass now has had his issues on the IL as well. So I think for both clubs, it's good. I understand the Cleveland angst, though, because guys, we're not too many years removed from when Yandy Diaz went from Cleveland to Tampa Bay for Jake Bowers. And we know Tampa Bay has won that one in spades for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, a couple things I want to discuss. First of all, great point by you there, Jensen, in reference to the Guardians in terms of their getting rid of pitchers at the right time. I thought Corey Kluber is the best exhibit of anybody out there. By the way, Jeff, moving forward, there are two things I don't want to hear on the show. The land. As a former Northeast Ohio resident, I don't know where they came up with that, Jensen. I never heard that before. The Cavs came up with that gimmick. And number two, the guards. We're going to have to retire the guards even before it gets off the runway here. Okay, let's move on. When you talk about some of these other teams right now, when you look at it, who's a team from your perspective, if you were a front office that would look to make a move, whether it's a bat or a pitcher, what for you needs to be addressed by a team that is in contention right now? Which would be that team?
Gosh, I'm all waiting for Baltimore to really cash in here, right? I mean, you come off just a scintillating win on Sunday Night Baseball, and you've won the season series against the New York Yankees for the first time, what feels like forever. I think they need to make not only a move for a starting pitcher, but man, you got to find a way to really get another bullpen arm, I think, in the back there to try and shorten games to about six or seven innings. Make no mistake about it, Felix Bautista, Yennier Cano, as good as it comes there as far as a setup and closing 1-2 punch. But you guys know as well as I do, when you get into October baseball, you've got to have a guy at the top with some swing and miss as far as a starting rotation piece goes. We don't think Baltimore across the league has that at the moment. Have they pieced it together really well? They have, and they deserve all the credit in the world for that. But Amal, if I'm sitting here today, if I'm Mike Elias, let's go. Pedal the metal, man. Make a splash and be able to separate yourself in what is looking to be yet again another crowded American League East.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the big name that's floating around right now is Justin Verlander. And that would be a perfect piece for them. They don't have a frontline starting pitcher, even though Verlander in his 40s now, he's been awesome the last month. And from the Mets perspective, Baltimore has the pieces that could come back and actually get close to fair value, especially if the Mets are willing to eat some money on Verlander.
Yeah, and Jeff, I think there's multiple things that would have to occur as far as the no trade clause just for Justin Verlander in realizing, you know, what the Mets, knowing that you've already given Max Scherzer away, basically, and also that trade, if you do that, trading Scherzer and Verlander, my goodness, what a reset would be for the Mets, who have, as we know, the highest payroll ever in the game. Not to say that it won't happen, but I would put it under 50% that Verlander goes, at least to Baltimore. That being said, I think we could see some things develop here, maybe towards the end of the day and in the early hours of tomorrow, because you're already starting to see many of the available starting rotation candidates come off the board. We find out yesterday, basically, the Chicago Cubs are going to hold on to Marcus Stroman. I think that is basically your last frontline chip of teams having to make decision between being buyers and sellers.
Jensen, I want to go to the National League. Atlanta's been thoroughly dominant right now. But who's a team that looks like they could be a legitimate threat in the postseason? Because the Dodgers, the starting pitching, Tony Gonsolin has struggled. Julio Urias has had some problems. Walker Buehler, maybe he comes back in September, can give you something. The Padres are getting great pitching from Snell and Musgrove, but can they make the push? Is there a team, maybe Milwaukee or Cincinnati? Who do you like besides Atlanta?
Boy, not a lot of all. Yeah. I mean, that just kind of tells you how good Atlanta has been and how deep it feels like they are. They can almost overwhelm any of the opponents that you throw out there in a possible NLCS. If I have to hitch my wagon to someone, it just feels like in a longer series, a team that, yeah, you know, when you look at where, you know, perhaps Arizona, the Dodgers, they may have the ability to stick with it, but I think still that Arizona would need a starting pitching piece, and I think they would need a bullpen piece. The Dodgers, man, if they got Verlander, okay, now we're talking a little bit. Now we've got a little bit of an opportunity to hang in there. I don't see anyone from the Central, whether it's Cincinnati or Milwaukee, that wins that division. Or Chicago, heck, if they find their way through, just doesn't feel like they have enough to hang with Atlanta. And I guess the only team, ironically, would probably be Philly, because you have the front end starting pitching, you have the dominant back end of the bullpen when they're healthy, and they've got the lineup. If you got to win a slugfest, Philly could do it right alongside. So who knew we'd be saying that the Phillies might be the one team of all that could have any shot of all those other National League contenders to try and take Atlanta down.
Jensen, I agree with you on Philly. Again, a lineup that has not been exactly what we expected this year, but Zach Wheeler's still awesome, and Aaron Nola, at some point you would anticipate the gears get going for him, and the familiarity of playing Atlanta, not as many times as they did in the past, but division familiarity as well. Jensen Lewis with us right now, of course, Sirius XM, MLB Radio, Cleveland Guardians pre and post on Bally Sports. I just want to go to the Texas Rangers real quick, because obviously they make the surprise trade for Scherzer. Obviously, we know DeGrom's on the shelf. Eovaldi's on the IL right now. They're only one game clear, Houston, after a bad weekend in San Diego for them. What do you think about the Rangers with all the injuries in the pitching staff and now having Scherzer now, of course, leading the way in that rotation?
Jeff, I said at the All-Star break that if you're Texas and you kind of look behind you and see the Astros, even with all their injuries and the inconsistency in their starting rotation, they're only three games clear. And you're like, we've played this well and we're only three games ahead of Houston. Like it had to be one of the most frustrating All-Star breaks. And it's why you saw this front office kind of get out in front and say, not only do we need a guy in the back end and Aroldis Chapman, but we need an ace to go along with Nathan Eovaldi. We need a guy who's been there, done that. Makes sense to go get Max Scherzer and be able to have the offset of the financials with the Mets eating a fair amount of that money. The Jordan Montgomery acquisition, I think, will be very crucial too, just because he can be a guy that eats up some of those innings at maybe the middle to bottom of the rotation to save some of the guys at the top. The one injury I keep an eye on, guys, is Jonah Heim. And boy, oh boy, if it's a lingering one, a guy that has probably flown under the radar, but as an all-star, he might be as important to what they do in the middle to back part of their lineup as any, because now when you look at Houston, guys, a healthy Altuve, a healthy Yordan Alvarez, Jose Abreu is finally looking like the guy that he's been the last couple of seasons. And oh, by the way, Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman are swinging their usual hot bats. The only other guy they got to get going is Jeremy Pena. Chaz McCormick's been great. They have Yainer Diaz now in the back. Houston looks like they got reservations yet again for a seventh consecutive ALCS. Going to be a fun race there in the West to the end of the regular season.
All right, Jensen, you've done a tremendous job of breaking it down like you always do when you come on this show. Give me a prediction now. We're not going to hold your feet to the fire on this one because it's only July 31st. There might be some acquisitions still yet to come by tomorrow. But who are you picking to potentially face Atlanta if that's the team that comes out of the National League? If I said to you today, pick that team that gets to the World Series, the American.
I'll stick with Toronto. That was my pick at the beginning of the year. I 33-22 in their last 55. That's a sneaky little stretch there. That's like a 98 win pace. And you saw the acquisitions that they've gone out and done so far. They may not be done yet, but they are now starting to play, I think, to the capability of where we anticipated at the beginning of the season. I'll stick with it. I'll ride it out, guys. Atlanta and Toronto was my exact at the beginning of the year. So I'm hoping I get to the window with that prediction.
Jeff, Dustin and I are excited by that because we both have the Blue Jays going to the World Series as well.
I'll be the odd man out on this one. Even though, again, Toronto's talent as good as anyone in the American League. And boy, the AL wide open right now. Any one of the six or seven teams with a legitimate chance to make it to the Fall Classic. Again, he's Jensen Lewis, Cleveland Guardians pre and post, SiriusXM MLB Network Radio as well. Jensen, thanks for hanging out with us today.
Great to talk to you guys. We'll talk again soon.
You forgot to mention also one of our favorite guests.
One of our favorite guests as well. Jensen Lewis, everyone. When we come back, hey, Amal, we get to talk some college football, some win totals that you like next.